Hello, Finding Humanity listeners. We have some exciting news to share. Our podcast has just been nominated for the 2022 Webby Awards. The show that you've been supporting since we launched in 2020 has been singled out as one of the 5 best podcasts in the world for public service and activism. But we need your help. The Webby People's Voice Award winners are chosen by listeners like you. Take a minute to vote for Finding Humanity at webbyawards.com. The link is in our show notes and show description. Voting closes on April 21st. Thank you so much for your support.
I think we see a lot of people who are eating regularly. They're also eating things that we don't consider healthy because that's all they can afford. And they are actually feeding themselves, but they're not feeding themselves well with good nutrient-dense food. That is a large number of Americans. And it's not that they're not eating well by choice. It's that they're not eating well because they have no choice.
That's Kimmy Saradon. Growing up, Kimmy's family always had food on the table, but they still experienced food insecurity.
At least I hope in the last couple years with the pandemic, when it's like suddenly, you know, millions of people have no job and they can't get work and they can't pay their bills and they can't pay their rent. And we can't look at that and say, wow, all these people are flawed and their character is flawed. And I just hope that at this point, we all realize that there are circumstances beyond people's control, beyond people's character, that put them in those places. And if we can get past the shame, maybe we can get into a conversation where we're actually looking for real solutions.
This is Finding Humanity, and I'm your host, Hazami Bermada. Through true stories of courage and purpose, we put a human face on the biggest challenges of our time. In each episode, we examine how we got here, and how you can be part of solving humanity's most pressing social issues. Kimmy grew up in a lower middle class neighborhood in Colorado.
My dad is a Filipino American and my mother is a good old Midwestern American. She was born and raised in Stockton, Kansas. And, you know, interestingly, both my parents worked. They both worked full time. My mom was a reservations agent for Continental Airlines, which became United Airlines. And my dad worked as a mechanic for the Purina dog company. And they both worked full time. But still, you know, I think this is just the same thing for so many Americans. Still, that was not enough to pay our mortgage and pay for all the stuff.
Due to those financial constraints, Kimmy's family often had to compromise on food.
We always bought the generic food. We always bought the cheap food. There was always food that was very scarce. And like my mom made ends meet and, you know, the universal sauce was always cream of mushroom soup sauce. And that went on most everything, but it was always the cheapest cuts of meat. She would sort through at the grocery store, through packages of chicken, looking for the cheapest one that she could possibly find. It's not that we sat around talking about it. It's that it was just obvious. Everything was just the cheap stuff. We couldn't get the expensive stuff. A thing of ice cream was a huge splurge. Once when a family member was living with us and she had spare money and was buying ice cream, it just frustrated my mother because she couldn't afford to give us ice creams and this family member wasn't sharing with us. And it was just one of those points where the differences were so obvious. We rarely got these things.
What Kimmy experienced growing up can be classified as food insecurity. Food insecurity describes a situation in which people don't have physical, social, and economic access to sufficient, safe, and nutritious food. Although many might believe that only people who experience hunger are food insecure, this issue is a lot more complex. In some cases, food is unavailable due to lack of supply. In other cases, the food might be available, but people are not able to access it due to financial or physical constraints. Or, like in the case of Kimmy, food might be available and accessible, but scarce and unhealthy.
We never went without food. but it was always precarious. It was always front and center that we might not be able to get food, or we might not be able to go shopping that week. We think a lot about people who are starving, which is a very acute problem that they can't eat every day. And then there are a very large number of Americans that they might eat every day, but, you know, food is 30, 50, 60% of their budget, and any small thing is going to knock them into complete food insecurity, and they might be eating every day, but they're not affording anything else.
I wanted to better understand the various causes of food insecurity. I talked to Maximo Torero, the chief economist of the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, or UNFAO.
The availability of food is not the leading cause of hunger and food insecurity in our world today. So we have enough food in the world to feed every person on this planet. And the biggest problem is access to food right now, or the ability of people to have the sufficient means to purchase food. And the lack of access to food often is related to insufficient income or resources to buy or trade sufficient quantities and qualities of food that are needed. A second common misconception is that hunger is our main problem. And yes, hunger is a major global challenge. However, an even larger problem is the millions of people today that face more moderate forms of food insecurity. That means other forms of malnutrition. So they can face uncertainty about their ability to obtain food, or they have been forced to compromise on the quality and quantity of the food that they consume.
Even though we produce more than enough food, in 2019, 750 million, or nearly one in every 10 people in the world, were exposed to severe levels of food insecurity. And hunger today affects 9.9% of the world population. This issue is relatively hidden, especially in countries with developed economies where overall hunger levels are low. Food insecurity in rich countries ranges from 8 to 20% of the population. For example, in the United States, 15% of the population, that's around 50 million people, are food insecure. As Maximo notes, most of the population experiencing food insecurity does not experience hunger, but is simply unable to afford or access nutritious food. Reason being, healthy food is often less readily available and much more expensive.
Unhealthy food is mostly starchy foods. The prices are lower because there is bigger production of it. And also because if you look at how the society and the governments are supporting starchy foods, the support and the subsidies are bigger. So we talk today about healthy diets, but most of the subsidies into agriculture go to staple commodities. Therefore, those prices are lower than high-value commodities. It's a mistake to put the money today in staple foods when you are arguing that people need to eat healthier diets. So there has to be a repurposing of those subsidies so that you can have better access to healthy diets.
Because unhealthy foods are cheaper, some people who experience food insecurity are also overweight. In fact, both food insecurity and obesity can be consequences of low income and the resulting lack of access to enough nutritious food. Growing up, Kimmy struggled with her weight due to the food insecurity she experienced.
There's a huge misconception around people being overweight and not believing that they could possibly be food insecure if they're overweight, when one, they're not getting a balanced, healthy diet with nutrient-dense foods. And two, the stress that comes with food insecurity is a snowball thing, and comfort foods are part of that, as are convenience foods. So, you know, when you're food insecure and you're stressed and you are wanting something comforting, you go to the foods that you know that are comforting, that are not nutrient-dense. When you're working multiple jobs, you're eating convenience foods. I was a secret stress eater, and so I think food insecurity brings in things like secret stress eating and binging and things like that. And so I was a person who would put my emotions into food, and we had very not great foods. And, you know, even to this day, the comfort foods that I really enjoy are some really cheap, not very good foods, which are just going back to a place from childhood that's where I could find comfort was in food. And it was things like processed bologna slices and, you know, cheap cellophane wrapped cheeses and things like that.
Kimmy's unhealthy relationship with food carried through college. She went through cycles of binge eating and starving herself. She also struggled with her body image. Like in Kimmy's case, food insecurity is related to negative mental health outcomes. In fact, a recent US study found that people experiencing food insecurity are at an approximately 250% higher risk of anxiety and depression. I spoke to Clancy Harrison about the effects of food insecurity. Clancy is the founder of the Food Dignity Movement and the host of the Food Dignity podcast.
I've interviewed people on the podcast that talk about when they were scarce on food, they would binge eat. They would eat whatever they would get when they finally had it. And that also carried over into their adulthood to where they are living in a larger body. They might have a different relationship with food, binge eating particularly. And so this is something that we need to have more research. We need to talk more about this because it's extremely important. And then from another standpoint, I interviewed a person who was homeless and needed to go into a food pantry. And she talked about being embarrassed because she lived in a larger body and she was afraid that people would question her. If you weigh that much, then why are you getting this food? You clearly have food. And so that was a stigma and a shame that she was experiencing surrounding body image and the trauma that she was going through. It's certainly a major topic that we need to really put more resources in and understand better because it does impact people throughout their whole entire life.
In her work, Clancy hopes to challenge such assumptions around people who experience food insecurity. In her 15-year career as a dietitian, she made some of those assumptions herself.
I saw myself as part of the solution, or I thought I was the solution. I thought I was going to help people living with obesity or living with diabetes or chronic disease. As a dietitian, I just assumed that I would be able to help them by telling people what to eat and what not to eat. I made a lot of assumptions that people could get in their car, drive to a grocery store. When they got to the grocery store, there was a lot of great looking food, and then they could take their wallet out and buy the food that we talked about. And just in all of that is a lot of assumptions, and that was based off of my lived experience. So I was projecting that onto other people without really asking them what they truly needed or their barriers around food access.
Clancy realized that she was making the wrong assumptions about her clients after she became the president of a large food pantry.
If I have to dive into where my misconceptions come from, I have to say, well, it's how I grew up. It was how I was raised. I had a misconception going to the food pantry that I would see people actively using drugs and alcohol. That stems from my family. I also had a misconception that people might be lazy or uneducated or using our system or tax dollars when that wasn't the case. And that could be from political viewpoints from different people within my family and how I was raised. So when I walked into that food pantry and I realized that all of these misconceptions and my fears were wrong, they were unfounded, they were not true, I had to really take a step back and say, where is this coming from and what do I do about it?
During the COVID-19 pandemic, Clancy has been inviting others to reconsider their assumptions around food.
Because now we have a drive-through because of COVID. Many times I might hear volunteers or even the people helping with traffic control say, I can't believe they're coming here and they have that nice car. They don't need food. They're just getting it because it's free. And I have to take a step back and say, why don't we just kind of unpack this? Why don't we talk about it a little bit more? You know, maybe their boss let them borrow their car. Maybe that was their car, but they lost their job and they can't liquidate it at this point, but they can still use it to get to point A to point B. They can still use it to come to the food pantry. So comments like that play a major role. So we've experienced COVID. We're still experiencing COVID. I can tell you our food pantry went from 150 people at each distribution to over 2,000. Our peak number was around 2,600 people. So for a small operation, that was a really big change. The amount of food that we would go through an entire month was gone within 2 hours.
During the pandemic year of 2020, food insecurity increased throughout the world. From 2019 to 2020, the number of undernourished people grew by over 160 million.
And that's the biggest increase in 1 year that we have ever seen in decades.
That's Maximo again.
Food insecurity is throughout the world, no? both in rich and poor countries. And the COVID-19 pandemic showed that. Why? Because we have huge inequalities in the world, no? And those inequalities were exacerbated because of COVID-19. So all the people that lose their jobs automatically had a problem of access. So of course, they have some savings in the richer countries especially, which allow them to protect themselves for a period of time. But most of these people also had food in the schools, and the schools were closed. Now, what is the difference between developed and developing countries, and which was clearly reflected in COVID-19, is informality. In economies which are formal, like in Europe or in the US, you have unemployment insurance, you have social security, you have health insurance. So in Europe, for example, if you lose your job, which many people lost their job because of the COVID-19 restrictions, you have unemployment insurance for a period of 6 to 9 months. So you keep receiving 80% of your salary. And after that, you receive social security, which will be 40% of your salary or 30%. So you will still have income. You will deteriorate the quality of your diets. You will move to cheaper diets because your income is going down.
The pandemic affected formal economies like the United States, but it hit informal economies even harder.
In a world where you have 70% of the population informal, the people that were informal, they don't receive social security. They don't have unemployment insurance. So basically, they are depleting whatever income they had or whatever savings they have in the period of prolongated lockdowns. So what we observed with COVID-19 was, yes, when there is inequality and when there is illegal workers or informality, those people will be affected. And you saw the lines in the US of going to food banks and so on. But the worst situation was faced where countries in Latin America, for example, that were middle, high middle income, and those countries were significantly informal. Peru is 70%, others are 50%. So what happened? These countries put in place policies that were not the most optimal ones. For example, they create this huge time of lockdowns. So for an informal worker, which was not poor because they had an income, and a big income sometimes, they are middle class in many cases, their source of income was disappeared because they could no longer sell in their informal market. They could only do the services they were doing informally. So they didn't have income for 1 month, for 2 months, for 3 months, for 4 months. So they start to deplete whatever asset they have or whatever working capital they have. So these people went into food insecurity, even to severe food insecurity, and even fall into poverty.
As Maximo notes, crises like the pandemic push people into poverty and therefore into food insecurity. Kimmy believes that if she had experienced the pandemic as a child, her family wouldn't have been able to afford food.
I think I really thought about it at the beginning of the pandemic. I was talking to my sister and it was like, we wouldn't have survived this, partly because our father was very prideful and he would not have accepted going to a food pantry. Both of their jobs were jobs that probably would have been furloughed, and we had nothing left after that. So it was paycheck to paycheck, and if a paycheck didn't come in, there wouldn't be food on the table. The beginning of the pandemic really just pushed us into this like very uncomfortable space with food. My sister, she's very much the person that has a very, very packed pantry and very packed cupboards these days. And she looks at that as like, yeah, those were all my years of being food insecure. I pack my cupboards. And I'm the person that went into food. I went to culinary school and stuff like that. And I kind of wonder how much of my like obsessiveness over food is related to the fact that we were so food insecure when we were younger, how it's like now I'm like hyper-focused on food. I mean, my husband doesn't understand when I'm like, oh, I'm thinking about dinner and what I'm going to make. And it's like 10 a.m. And he's like, yeah, I don't even think about that until I open the refrigerator. And I'm like, no, no, no. We got to think about this and plan it out and know how this is going to go together for dinner. And he just thinks it's bizarre. And I think that probably just mostly stems from my childhood food insecurity and like food preoccupying my mind all the time.
As in the case of Kimmy, food insecurity can have lifelong consequences. For this reason, we must take this issue seriously. But the reality is, food insecurity can't be solved with just one approach. I asked Maximo what we can do to address food insecurity.
Everybody has to play a role, to bring solid evidence, to bring solid data, to try to diffuse technologies and best practices to help the agri-food system transformation. The financial system has to help and provide the investment that is required to achieve this. And the private sector also has to play a crucial role because the private sector has to find ways in which they can produce in a more sustainable way. They need to find ways in which they can become more responsible. And that's where the true cost of food is important, because today we only know the market price of that food, but there's a lot of elements in that produce that doesn't have a market price, no? And that is water, for example. Very few countries price water properly, the quality of soil and the greenhouse gas emissions. So those things have to be incorporated in the price of food. And that doesn't mean that we will increase the price. It means that we need to understand what is behind the production of that commodity. And that's what the private sector has to start to realize, because they need to find ways in which they minimize the negative effects or the negative trade-offs of what they produce. So the way to think of this is, I have an objective function, okay? I want to achieve zero hunger. But achieving zero hunger will create trade-offs. Now, what is the optimal pathway I should play to achieve that goal of zero hunger, where I minimize my trade-offs? And there are many pathways that you can follow. But that level of information normally doesn't exist. So, for example, we know now that food loss and waste reduction is optimal, because it not only reduces hunger, because there is more food available, but second, it reduces the trade-offs on land, soil, and water. Okay? And it also reduces emissions. So why we don't do it then? Why we don't change drastically? So I think everybody has a responsibility to play and to be able to help on this.
As Maximo notes, addressing waste is one of the most effective ways to address food insecurity. According to the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, roughly one-third of the food produced in the world for human consumption every year gets lost or wasted. And just one-fourth of this food could feed all the world's hungry people, and a few more. Some countries are taking steps to address this issue. For example, France became the first country to ban edible food waste from supermarkets in 2015. They are forcing stores to instead donate food to charities. In the United States, food waste is estimated to be between 30 to 40% of the food supply. Implementing similar programs could have exponential effects. Besides changes at the government level, we can all do something to address food insecurity. For Kimmy, that meant volunteering at a homeless shelter and at a local community market. In sharing her story, Kimmy hopes that people will reconsider their prejudice around food insecurity.
I think the big thing people can take away is getting over the shame and looking at people and what they own and what their body type is, and making assumptions about how well they're doing with food. Getting past this idea of we need to be shaming people. At least I hope in the last couple years with the pandemic, we all realize that there are circumstances beyond people's control, beyond people's character, that put them in those places. And if we can get past the shame, maybe we can get into a conversation where we're actually looking for real solutions.
Food insecurity is a massive global health problem. Compounded issues of malnutrition coexist alongside obesity and other diet-related diseases. We have enough food to solve this issue. Through our podcast, we aim to educate and inspire you to take action. There are many ways to do that. Here are just a few suggestions. First, create or donate to a local food bank or food distribution center to provide fresh, healthy, and affordable foods for marginalized communities. Second, be mindful of how much food you waste. Be a food waste warrior and encourage those you know to do the same. Third, learn more about food insecurity and food waste and advocate for change. We've prepared an educational toolkit on our website to help you deep dive into this issue further. We invite you to host a teach-in for your friends, colleagues, and community. Knowledge is power, and you have the power to inspire real change. If you'd like to hear more empowering stories from Finding Humanity, or to learn more about this episode, visit our website at findinghumanitypodcast.com. Please subscribe, rate, and review our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Your ratings and reviews help Finding Humanity reach new audiences, so we thank you for your support. In our podcast, we cover pressing and at times controversial social and political issues. The views and opinions expressed are those of the interviewees and do not reflect the positions or opinions of the producers or any affiliated organizations. Finding Humanity is a joint production of the Humanity Lab Foundation and Human Group Media. For this episode, I'd like to thank Kimmy Ceredon, Maximo Torero, and Clancy Harrison. Our co-executive producers are Camille Lorente and Hazami Bermada. Associate producers are Fernanda Oriegas and Tani Jaraprasok. Policy and background research by Carolina Mindica and Tani Jaraprasok. Mixing, editing, and music by Maverick Aquino. I'm your host, Hazami Bermada. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to seeing you on our next episode.